Welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais. And the idea behind these conversations is to sit down with people who are on the path of mastery, to better understand what they're searching for, to understand their unique psychological framework, and how they understand how they've become. And in particular, we want to understand the unique mental skills that they're working to develop, why they've chosen those skills, and how they're working to build and refine their craft by using those mental skills. Okay, we're interested in those robust, those sturdy practices that they use. We're not interested in hacks and tricks and tips. We're not interested in that. We're interested in like how they think and how they develop. And with that in mind, like these conversations, they're just rich. They're long form. They're really nuanced. They're full of context with twists and turns to try to get to the center of the psychological framework. And if you're like me and you enjoy taking a second pass at these conversations, just because they're applied, they're thought-provoking, and they're inspiring ways about thinking maybe differently. And so because of that, and because of the calling that you've asked for, we fired up a second podcast called Minutes on Mastery. And it's just that. It's insights under 3 minutes from those that are on the path of mastery. And so if you're interested in that, you would love that dumped into your inbox, meaning your podcast inbox, every morning. Punch over to iTunes and do a quick little search for Minutes on Mastery. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time in early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Okay, this conversation is with Jimmy Smith. Now, it's two common names, but Jimmy is that dude in his industry. And if you've spent time with creatives and branded entertainment in that world, he needs no introduction. You already know who he is. But for the rest of us, you know, some kind of highlights for him to get a quick snapshot of who he is. He was listed as one of the top creative minds for Fast Company. His footprints are inside of the companies and the campaigns such as Nike and Gatorade. And those are just two that are cool off the top of my head. Okay. Jimmy is bold. He's smart. He's articulate. He sees things off axis and he has insight and he tells story through both of those lenses, meaning a bit off axis in his storytelling, which is brilliant and beautiful, but there's insight that is embedded underneath of it. And I think it's the combination of those two that is really intriguing. So he's a risk taker and not a risk taker like some of the people we've had. There's a different form of risk taking that he has embraced. He's definitely got a really strong spiritual framework that is obvious through this conversation. And he's an entrepreneur. And when he laughs loudly. When he's curious, he's really curious and he's not afraid to ask, like, what do you mean by that? And he's just flat out creative. And that's me saying it, not him. And he's received tons of awards, but he's just creative. And I've really enjoyed knowing him. And the conversations with him are they're stimulating, they're on point. And he forces with his creative mind as an intelligence for those conversations to be just that. And, you know, not one of the things that I've just said is an exaggeration. And I just hope that this conversation does him and everyone that we've had on these conversations just the absolute most beautiful justice we can. All right. While I was in this conversation, I was in it and I was loving it and it was just so good. And it went almost 2 hours. So we're going to split them up across part one and part two so that you can digest the nuances and, you know, just let it marinate and let it soak in just a little bit. So two of the things I think are really important to pay attention to is how he made sense of his early life in a way that has become a compass for his later life. I think it's really cool. And wait until you hear about what it was like for him growing up. I mean, it's unbelievable. And how he used all of that without malcontempt, without bitterness, to do good by people and in life and in business. And as a side note, he's incredible with names in just a really gracious way. He gives so much respect and tribute to his teachers and mentors along the way. And it's just it was just plainly obvious that he really has great respect for those that have been on the journey with him. And the second part is that he speaks volumes about resiliency without ever using the word. And if resiliency is just about, you know, recovering quickly, the image that comes to mind for Jimmy for me is that he's like water. He flows until he figures it out. And he's got really rich insights on this concept of resiliency without knowing the science, without knowing all that good stuff, but watch what he does around this concept. Okay, so we dive into racism. We talk about how he's made sense of that for himself and how it's influenced his business direction. We talk about his approach to not taking no for an answer and what goes into that and how he understands the mechanics of confidence to be able to not take a no. We talk through how to filter out ideas to get to great ones. And I guess that's something that is important for all of us. No, I said, I guess. I mean, I know that's important for all of us and especially heightened in the creative world. And so we explore that concept. And we also dive into this conversation about a process to find out what you're naturally good at. And how he did that for himself. So enjoy this journey inside a creative genius and a dude that is just fascinated by it. I mean, that's kind of what this conversation is about. I hope this conversation reconnects you to the importance of carving your own path and investing deeply in yourself, in your craft, in others, and in nature. And so with that, let's jump right into this conversation with Jimmy Smith. Jimmy,
Yo, what's good, Mike?
Okay, so let's, this is going to be a treat for me, and I hope it's a treat for you. But the idea that I want to cultivate is you have your finger on the pulse of what it means to be creative. And you've organized your life to pursue the creative process to create things that are meaningful along that journey. So it's not art for the sake of art. You're doing things that have meaning behind it. And 100%. At least that's how I think about you.
100%.
Okay. So the hope is that in this conversation, I don't know enough about your path to get to be one of the legends in the field of creating. And we'll talk about that legendary status in just a moment. But I don't know enough about your path. I know a lot, I think, about why you do what you do. And I'd love to unpack both of those with this idea in mind that what we'll do is hopefully have a conversation about how you've dealt with difficult things. Because the creative process, I know there's challenge embedded in it. And it, you know, like pursuing these ideas and ways of living and projects that you're on are big and bold and huge. And like, how do we create a process that we can share with other people? So with that in mind, where did you first begin to notice that you were just a little different than other people?
Oh, probably when I was five. I was the only black kid at an all-white neighborhood in school. So it started off, you're a little different early. I was cool from when I was born up to about four because we lived in a black neighborhood. And then Dr. Martin Luther King in NAACP, all those camps were saying we needed to integrate. So we were blockbusters. My mom and dad brought me along to be a blockbuster.
And a blockbuster is when you would bus into a school?
Bust into a neighborhood that was all white.
I was bussed out of a neighborhood.
Were you really?
Yeah, I don't know if we ever talked about this.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
So this was in Virginia, was like the first couple years of my life. And yeah, I remember I was bussed out. I had to get on a bus for a long period of time to go to a different neighborhood. And I don't remember actually having it like be impactful for me, but I was one of the kids that I was just around other kids. But you noticed it for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, KKK threatened the builder of the house and threatened the daughter of the builder of the house in Michigan.
That you were living in?
Yeah, that I was living in. And so we had to get the cat that built the house. My dad had to go get somebody from Ohio to make the house. We had stuff thrown at the house, thrown at the cars, windows shot with, fortunately, they were BBs, but still they're breaking windows. And I was called, you know, nigger, you know, very often in school. Like, you know, you'd be fighting a normal, healthy, if there is such a thing, but just a kid, you know, first grader having a fight, and the kids would gather around and go, a nigger. No, a fight, a nigger and a white. And which is pretty bad for the kid I was fighting, because then you're taking it up to another notch. You can't have them win when that's going down. But the teachers were always dope. The principal, Mr. Howe.
Wait, hold on. Before we go there, what was that like for you? What was it like to be your house shot at? The experience you just described. What was it like as a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old?
I can't really tell you because it was normal. I was like, oh, okay, this is the way it is over here. So I didn't really look at it as being like fucked up until I got older. It's like, really? It's really fucked up. And my mom and dad were very supportive. They were like, it would go against what you're supposed to do today. But they give me all types of names. Oh, they're calling you a nigger? Well, then here's some names that you can call them. So we, you know, they gave me ammo. And I never, ever, between them and the principal, never got in trouble for fighting.
You didn't?
Like, you couldn't do that today. Like, sequel, this is in the 2000s, late 1990s, early 2000s. An Asian kid called him a nigger, and he clocked him, and both of them got put out of school, which is how they handle things nowadays. But back when I was growing up, they determined who was right, who was wrong. And then that person who was wrong, who started it or whatever and whatnot, would be the one that got in trouble. I never got in trouble.
What? How has fighting?
Which was really important. Not only it's one thing to have your parents, which you need to be supportive, but to have a white principal and white school teachers, because the school was, you know, it was maybe two of us at the school, to have to know that all white people aren't bad.
Was so that was super, that was part important. Of the experience that you had.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like? So do you? Okay, I've got like 15 questions. Hold on, let me slow down. Because where my mind's wanting to go, but I want to get there more of a general cadence, is that you don't have hatred in you.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Right? And so you were punked, you were bullied, you experienced racism at a young age. And in the formative years, you knew what it felt like to be on the underhand, so to speak. Like,
correct.
Right? Like, and you don't have it. You don't have an angry. I don't know you to have angry or hostility or racism or any cynicism, even about the way that you see the world. Like, you see through hope and love and creativity. And so how did you do that? And I also want to know, like, how fighting shaped you.
Well, in you know, this will sound weird. The same kids who were calling me names, some of them ended up becoming my best friends. So for them, it was like, you know, whether they heard it in the house or saw it on TV or whatever, their grandparents. I know, like, one who was, quote unquote, my childhood, you know, girlfriend, not really, but that's what we said. She was my girlfriend. She was and her grandmother, she'd see us playing. We were only third grade, fourth grade, whatever. And she'd say, "Why are you playing with that black kid?" That was her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but she didn't feel that way. And like this one kid, Bobby Andre, we played on the basketball team in high school. He was watching Archie Bunker, and Archie Bunker, I guess we called some kid Spade or something, somebody Spade on the TV show.
Yeah.
And so he would call me Spade, and obviously that was conflict. And
so what would you do at those moments when somebody would say a name to you or insult you in that way? What do you remember to be your response?
Pop them upside their head.
Right away.
Right away.
Without a question.
No, we ain't wasting any time.
Zero hesitation.
That. No.
Okay. So can you think of a moment where that took place?
Yeah, I can think of a bunch.
Okay. So you're really good with words, right? You are, like, that's part of your genius. And so why would you not use words? Did you come to learn how to use words later? Or, like,
the principal said, "Jimmy, you can't beat up everybody that calls you a name." He said that, and it was Mr. Howe. And
how many fights are we talking about?
They're probably from kindergarten until third grade. There would at least be one fight a week, at least minimum.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this mentor, in some ways, said to you, the principal said, mm-hmm. "You can't beat everybody up." And were you always big?
No, I was not. I didn't get big till like high school.
Okay. 6'5"?
6'3" and a half.
6'3" and a half.
Without shoes.
So, okay. All right. All right. So 6'3" and a half. And, but you have a big presence.
But I wasn't little. You know, I wasn't, yeah, you know, one of the scrawny little kids.
Why use violence as the strategy? What was that about for you?
Black Panthers were out then.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of digging the Black Panthers.
Your family was?
No, just me.
You?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just me. I mean, they didn't say anything negative against the Black Panthers, but, mm-hmm, you know, kids always like the anti-hero dudes and all that kind of stuff. So we knew what they, even at that age, you kind of knew what they were about. And I had a cousin, older cousin, who was like about the same size as me when I became an adult. And he was living in Gary, Indiana, which is right outside of Chicago. So every time we go over there, he'd have the Black Power sign and all that kind of stuff. So it was like, you know, power to the people, man. You had JB, Papa don't take no mess.
And so did this create the beginnings?
Violence was different back then. You could have a healthy fight. And it wasn't like somebody's going to get a gun or a knife or anything like that. It's like, don't do that or we will throw down. But it wasn't like somebody was going to end up violently injured or something like that.
Yeah, you never different. Thought someone was going to pull out a gun or a knife.
Right. No, and, no. And they didn't think so either.
That's right. Okay. So without hesitation, and then I would imagine that that had some, well, I guess some cost, but maybe an asset that other people were like, okay, well, we're going to stop calling them names.
Yep.
Because that eventually stopped. That's going to stop.
Yep.
So you stopped it.
Yep.
For you.
Yep.
Were there other black people that were your friends that didn't have that strategy that the vengeance moved to them?
You know, they were, first of all, there was only literally maybe three black kids. So I was in, and I would be, maybe there's two black kids in my grade, one kid in a higher grade or lower grade, and that was it. Right. So there's only three of us out of 500 or however many kids were at the school. And then one was female, and then one of them was male, but I think he was younger and he was a little scrawnier. So
what happened for him?
I don't really know. We didn't really hang out.
Okay. Okay. So how did that impact you moving forward?
Not taking no for an answer. And if you want me to lose, the worst thing you can do is say, I can't do something. Cause that happened all of the time. You're black, so you can't do this. It wasn't just the kids at the school. It was like, you know, going to the local shopping market or something like that, going to the park and say, you can't get on that swing. You're black or whatever the deal was. So that was the worst. Or an inadvertent racism where they didn't intend to be racist per se. But one of the teachers in seventh grade, I remember I said, you know, I wrote in the paper, cut off the lights. And she said, no, it's put off the lights. And I said, well, you say put off, but in my family, we say cut off. That's not a right, even in the seventh grade, that's not a right or wrong. And then my mom's a school teacher, dad owned businesses. So you growing up in that environment, knowing what they were about at home, you could stand up for yourself. So that's the worst thing you can do is tell me I can't do something. That's
because what happens for you?
No, I'm going to do it.
Even. Okay. So,
and the other part, and it doesn't always, obviously, you know, it's like, I've had people say your biggest strength is your biggest weakness, that kind of thing. So somebody telling me no is, and you don't have a valid, like something that makes, even if you may be right, if you can't articulate why not, then I'm going to go full head on and make that happen.
Do you think you're better than most people at when somebody says no, figuring out a way through?
Right.
Because of your experiences?
Absolutely. And then the other part is I got confidence, not arrogant confidence, but you had to be confident growing up in that environment with everybody. With the bullying going on, with the name calling and all that. So you had to develop a sense of, oh, like somebody could say anything to me. It's like, I don't give a fuck. That, you know, that doesn't mean shit to me.
Okay, I hear it. But I also can create another scenario or picture, which is, man, I don't want to go to school. It's hard there. It is. People are coming after me. It's scary. Bah, bah, bah. You know, fill in that blank. You said confidence, being able to figure out a way when other people told you no. Where does that come from?
Mom is bullheaded. So I know what where you're going for.
Yeah, that's right.
One of them, my mom is bullheaded. Dad went his first job that I can remember. He was worked at a factory. He hated that job at the factory. But yet he went every day. And the only reason I knew he hated that job is because my mom said he hated that job. It wasn't that he came home like, you know, kicking the dog or anything like that. So that was something. Okay. He hates it, but he's working that job to take care of the family. And then he's working it to own his Arby's, which he eventually ended up owning the Arby's. And so he's always doing what he needed to do in order to get to a better spot. A better position. Now, having said all that, I did have friends at the school too. It wasn't like everybody was an asshole.
Okay.
I definitely had friends.
Okay. So you were able to keep, you know, the people that made it difficult for you, you were able to isolate that it's one person, not a race of people or group of people.
Or it's a, yeah, a few people.
A few, right. But you saw them as individuals rather than a collective whole.
I had a weird, it was a weird environment. On top of the assholes, like I had one girl that we were really good friends and her dad moved because he thought we might get married. We were second graders. So you had that weirdness going on. But on the flip side of it, I did have a lot of really, really good friends. My teachers were dope, except for that one I pointed out, you know, a couple of them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Obviously. Principal was dope. The police officers were dope. Police officers were off the skillet. I didn't know police officers could be fucked up until I left and went to Chicago.
Got it. Oh, so you met him there.
Yeah, met him in Chicago.
Surprise. Okay. All right. So that was the formative years.
Yeah. Officer Doherty. Shout out to Officer Doherty.
Good or not so good?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Oh, he was the young.
Yeah, Norton Shores.
Okay. I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out. All right. So those are formative years. You figured out how to, I don't want to make this too simple, but you figured out how to respond in a way to stand up for yourself. You figured out how to way to use your skills, your internal skills, to move forward rather than to get stuck. And you also figured out that when someone told you no, that that's a sore spot. And so if it didn't make any kind of sense, you're going to work through it with a greater fuel.
Yep.
Okay. Mom created, you saw dad that worked his tail off to be able to make better. And then mom was bullheaded. So it was like that combination that you yep. have of working hard, which is sticking with something, and the bullheadedness not to yep. believe what others told you. Okay, now let me fast forward really quickly before we get into your craft.
And mom had her master's, dad had his master's, so.
Oh, so education was part of the
education,
family.
Even though, you know, as like any kid, I don't want to do that, whatever. They made sure your T's were dotted and I's dotted or whatever that saying is.
T's crossed, you know? Yeah.
So it was hard for somebody to say you weren't intelligent when you're coming home and somebody is helping you with the math, helping you with the English or whatever, and telling you you've written a paper and your mom's checked out your paper. Dad's done whatever he's done with math. That was his thing. And they're saying, no, the paper's good. So you walked into school with confidence that what you had, and they weren't going to tell you that, my mom's a school teacher. So what the
okay.
fuck?
I love it. Okay. So go back to confidence, and I was going to jump ahead, but let's stay here for a minute. Where did it come from for you? Did mom begin to shape the way that you spoke to yourself to feel big, or like where did confidence come from you? Did you figure it out on your own?
No, it was through really just observing. She was extremely confident. Dad was extremely confident. They would stick up for themselves. She had a teacher, a principal that was, I never remember it like it was yesterday, that would mess with her at school. And this was in a different school district. This was in an all black school district. And he would mess with her. And she's come home. My dad's name is James. James, I told that man such and such and such. So this was like often she'd come home with battles with this principal who was her boss, technically her boss. And she said, I'll go to the superintendent. I'll get switched out and go over, he ain't going to treat me that way, blah, 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 blah. So I understood, I'm imagining from that, stick up for yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, if you don't stick up for yourself, that did a whole hell of a lot more than whatever anecdotes they would give you. And then dad, we were across the street at the park.
Hold on. This is so good. This is really good because your parents modeled toughness.
Yeah.
They modeled resiliency.
Yeah.
They modeled confidence. And then what I just heard you say is that did more for you just observing them living these kind of mindset principles, is the way we would talk about it, that they were living them. So you got to have a clear understanding of what it looked like mm-hmm. and what it sounded like, rather than somebody teaching you, hey, be confident by this. Be confident right. this way.
I mean, they did that too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But
yeah.
Seeing it.
Ah, that's so good. Okay. That's the importance for us, all of us, to be able to live in alignment.
Yep.
And that's the best teacher.
Yep.
There you go.
And what I was going to tell you about dad, we were across the street. My cousin and I were on a bench swing, and we were really swinging up really high, and it would hit the back of the pole because we were going so high and we were just having fun. And white cat came out. Get off of that swing. You break it. And yeah, it's like, all right, jerk.
How old are you?
Fourth, fifth grade.
Okay.
So we went back home across the street. Dad was like, you guys just got there. Were you back home so soon? He said, guy told us to get off the swing or you break it. And he flared up. My dad did. And went across the street and said, show me, where is this guy?
Oh, my God.
Where is this guy? And by then, the guy was gone, so we couldn't find him. But it even caught me and my cousin off guard. It's like, okay, yeah.
You liked it.
Yeah, that was dope. Yeah. Pop defending the, the home turf. It was cool.
Okay. Okay.
It was unusual for him because he's very laid back. So that was like, okay, yeah, that guy crossed the line. Yeah, he crossed the line.
What an incredible preparation for you as a young man, young kid to a young man, to be able to have that model and that experience. Because when I think of ad agencies, which is the world where we first met, that mm-hmm. you came from, now I'm going to reference the TV show Mad Men, mm-hmm. Right? It's a white industry.
100%.
Right. And I'm, I'm saying that as an observation that I never met a black man in the industry. I'm sure there's plenty, but I never met.
There are not plenty.
Okay. And
there's a reason you haven't met any.
That's, well, I didn't know if I'm a limited population, but so now I understand how you are able to thrive in that environment, because that environment, I'm not saying it's racist, but that environment, you know how to get your way.
It is racist.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
There's a serious problem in the ad agency in terms of inclusion, diversity and inclusion. Big hot. It's been a hot topic for God knows since before I got into the business, and nothing has changed. It's screwed up. So
was it blatant racism, or was it the more cunning type where it's just, there's a glass ceiling and a glass wall everywhere you go?
I think it's blatant.
Okay.
I mean, in the beginning, I thought it was that, the way you described it in the mm-hmm. beginning, but it's like, how do you keep talking about something? It's like, my car's mufflers, the muffler in my car making all that racket. I need to fix it. But yet it keeps going on and making all that racket. That means you don't want to fix it. You can drive that car around for years and it's making bah, 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 and you don't fix it. That's because you don't want to. So that's the way I look at it. The majority of the people in this business do not see it as a problem and do not want to fix it.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's large.
Yeah.
That's a large statement. Yeah. And, you know, in coaching, we talk about, there's a phrase that I've heard often, which is either you're coaching it or you're allowing it. When an athlete or a coach is doing something, either you're telling them to do that or you're allowing to do it. And so the people of empower and influence are either coaching this way in the ad agency world, or they're allowing it. And you're saying
that's
deep. Yeah. Okay. So how have you been so successful in a creative world where you've had tension? Is a maybe a nice way of saying it.
Well, like I told you, I'm not going to take no. The average Huckleberry Hound, black, white, pink, blue, whatever, is after a while just, I'll go do something else. I don't know that word of give up, do something. I've said, you know, it happened with basketball. I wanted to play basketball, and I know exactly what I didn't do to make that happen. So when I got into the real world, it's like, well, we aren't going to make the same mistake we made with trying to play in the NBA. That won't happen.
I love it. There was a, you and I were kicking around some ideas one day. I don't know if you remember this, and I can't remember how it happened, but we were talking and there was a, what I thought was a really wonderful idea. And then we didn't talk for a little bit of time, and it was maybe, I don't know, 6-7 months later, we chatted and I said, hey, do you remember that idea? And you said, Mike, their great ideas don't happen very often. And so when I'm around one or in one, of course I remember. And so, like, can you walk through for us how you filter what a great idea is, a creative spark that has, that you consider to be great, and all the other stuff that just kind of is out there?
Number one, I'm looking for something that hasn't been done before.
Okay.
That's probably first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And because there's so much competition out there for whatever, whether it's an ad or whether it's a TV show or whether it's a movie. I mean, when you get on the airline, right? What do they say after you land? Thanks for flying whoever. Mm-hmm. And in my case, American. Thanks for flying American. We know that you have so many other airlines to choose from, right? So it's the same thing. So if everything is the same, everything's the same, even if something is kind of bad, if it's not looking, smelling, audio wise, not like anything else, it's going to stand out and you're going to notice that. So that's the first thing with a great idea.
I think a lot of people think that that's what they're searching for as well. So how do you generate those different ideas? And then how do you filter when one is different versus others that are different but not good?
It's actually, I truly believe it's a little bit easier for me than somebody else. Not because I'm special. Got the good Lord. So that makes it, you know, you're following in what he wants you to do. So that's going to smooth the path a little bit in terms of generating ideas.
How important is God and Jesus and the Trinity in your life?
Number one.
That's it.
Number one. Okay. So, okay. Yeah, it's just a the here's the other thing. Going back to when I grew up, mom and dad said I could do anything. Most, even black parents, if kid said he wanted to be president of the United States, baby, you ain't gonna be president of the United States, or you aren't gonna do this, or whatever the situation. I've heard white parents tell their sons they can't play basketball because they won't be able to jump as high and whatever. So I didn't have that. I can do whatever I want to. And then so when I read the Bible and it's saying all things through Christ, you know, nothing's impossible, blah, 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 blah. So, and then take Disney, and we used to have those things, you know, you do the little clicker on the side.
Oh, yeah. Like, what are those called? Not the glow finder, but something finder. Viewfinder, yeah.
That was, you know, it wasn't like you could go online and go to YouTube and watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or whatever the deal was. So I'd have those. And so between my parents, between God, and then Walt Disney, and it's like it looked like it was the most magical place on earth, right? Where you could do anything, could come true, anything could happen. So you put all that together. I actually believed that stuff. I believed it, like internalize it still to this day, and internalize it. Well, if the Lord wants me to, if he gave it to me, must have given it to me for a reason. So if he gave it to me, I got a shot at making this happen. So let's try and make that happen. So I never have in my mind that I can't do it.
Wow. Okay. So that comes from.
I'm not saying it happens all the time, but I'm right. Just saying.
Okay.
I believe that's doable.
And that comes from a spiritual framework. That comes from your study of what I would consider one of the great masters.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And now, I don't want to downgrade my understanding of Jesus, but like, if there's a carpenter, his dad had it, you know, locked in, right? You know, like whatever. So, okay. So you've done incredible studying, and that becomes the source of the path and philosophy for you.
Yeah.
Is there a word that guides your life?
A word?
A word or a phrase or something that really cuts to the center of guiding your life?
It was faith, belief. Nobody else is going to believe in you. You've heard that before. Nobody else is going to believe in you if you don't believe in yourself. So, you know, I do believe.
What do you believe? Yeah.
I won't fail. If I'm in on doing what Jesus has put me here on earth to do, what he created me to do, everybody's got their job. Everybody's got their assignment. If I'm going for that assignment of what he put me here to do, I ain't going to fail. So there's nothing to be fearful of. Now, if I'm doing some stuff that I ain't supposed to be doing, that's not, you know, that ain't my gift, or that's not my time or whatever, then we're going to run into problems.
Okay. So that's your philosophy. That's mm-hmm. what's guiding your life. Faith, to believe in myself, that I'm in alignment with.
To believe in God.
Thank you. Which means that in that extension, that I believe when I'm on the right path, I can do whatever that is. Okay. Now,
because Jesus always used to get mad at the disciples. They go, oh, you have a little faith, man. How long I got to be with you? How long I got to? Did you not see me walk on water? Did you not see that dude was dead and he came up? Did you not see you had water and all of a sudden it turned into wine? What's wrong with you people? So I'm going, I do not want to go up there before him when my time is up here on earth and go up there and have him sitting up there saying, well, you know, dude, you could have done this and that. What's wrong with you? That ain't happening with me. He'll have a whole bunch of stuff to say that I screwed up on, but that one he won't have.
Okay. So how did you sort out you didn't say like what you're designed for, but the job you're supposed to do here. How did you sort out what that is for you? That's for me, that sounds like life meaning, purpose. You know, how did you sort that out? And maybe even to articulate what it is.
Well, he, potentially, you know, you won't know till you get up there and holler at him for sure. But seemed like I was at home by myself a lot, right? So
as a kid,
yeah. Mom and I'm the oldest by 9 years.
Okay.
So by the time Poetry and D got old enough to, you know, do something with, I was in college. So
did you always know you were going to college?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Well, I mean, whether I wanted to or not didn't matter.
You were going.
You're going to college.
Okay.
But I always did think college would be fun. It wasn't like they had to twist my arm or anything. But oftentimes by myself, I'm sitting there because it's, you know, it wasn't the most pleasant place early on. It got pleasant. Now, I don't want to act like Norton Shores was screwed up from the beginning to the end. It definitely, by sixth grade, things definitely took a turn for the better. But by then, you're in the mid-70s or whatever it was. But so oftentimes, I was home by myself just, you know, okay, well, you got your Scooby-Doo or whatever's on TV. So you pull out a towel, you be Superman, you build a fort, you build, you know, do all that kind of stuff that I know a lot of kids have imagination at that age, but I had to take it to the next level. Otherwise it'd get kind of boring because there weren't that many friends.
So this idea of boredom, can you,
so when you said, how did I get to, I was doing a whole bunch of shit on my own.
Okay.
Creating, what is coloring, building, watching Disney, doing the viewfinder, whatever. So there's a lot of excessive imagination stuff at work going on. So when basketball failed, you know, and oh, so when I would write, my mom or dad would say, you know, send, grandma sent you $10 for your birthday. Make sure you write and say thank you. And I would go, oh, I didn't know I could just say, hey, grandma, thanks for the money. Love you, Jimmy. And that would be done. I'd write like a 1 or 2 page in handwriting letter backwards and, you know, front of the page, back of the page. And then grandma, uncle, whoever it was would go, that letter, it sounded like you were there. It sounded like you were right there in front. I mean, they would go on and on about my letters. So when the basketball thing failed, I always knew I could write.
Got it.
So
there you go. And so is that how you entered into the ad agency world as a writer?
Bewitch.
What does that mean?
There's, oh, the TV show.
Oh, Bewitched.
Bewitched.
That's where you started.
Yeah, well, yeah. The Remember Bewitched, Samantha Montgomery and Darren Stevens.
Yep.
Elizabeth Montgomery played Samantha, and Dick York played the first Darren Stevens. So anyway, he was in the ad business. He had a big house. He had a pretty wife. And if it wasn't for Endora screwing with him, turning him into a horse or whatever the deal was, he would just been sitting up there. You know, when he get turned, when it, whatever spell was on him, so say he was a horse and he got turned back into Darren, it seemed like it'd be, it was for television, but the way they portrayed it, he'd come out of it, he had 2 minutes to come up with some idea for the client. He'd run downstairs because the client would be at the house, or he'd run into the office and say, beans, they're great. They keep you lean. And the client would go, that's great. That's great. So as I was getting ready to pick a major for college, he looks like you just get to write and come up with cool stuff and creative stuff. And I remember the commercials growing up, you know, they would come on in between the shows and stuff. So I said, okay, I'll do that. Mom and dad were bugging me to have a fallback plan in case basketball didn't work. So I said, I'll do advertising. But for me, it was just a throwaway. It's, yeah, because I'm hooping. I'm not doing this. But if you need something, I got pick some. Let's do something. Pick something where you're creative and you get to write, and we'll be done with it.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being. But it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's AquaTrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there.
What are some of the things that you've created that, I'm imagining you're going to talk about Nike Freestyle, but some of the things that you've created that you say, God, that was good. That felt right. That was good work. Maybe we've heard of it. Maybe we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One was, like father, like son. So this was, by then my dad was maybe had passed, been dead for 2-3 years or something like that. It was still pretty fresh. And he died, of a heart attack like that. Nobody expected the heart attack. So anyway, this was for Nike and I was at a small agency called Muscadero Chin. And it was a multicultural ad agency. It was, Joe Muse was black, Mavis Cordero, Mexican, and David Chen, Chinese. And you'd walk through those offices and somebody is speaking Chinese, Spanish, Japanese. It was like 20-something different languages at one time. So you'd be working on ads for the Japanese consumer market, the Mexican consumer market, whatever, whatever, whatever. So anyway, they had a sliver of Nike, just a sliver. And so they had, I think it was Jerry Cronin was at Wieden and Kennedy, their main ad agency. And he had done this campaign, just do it campaign. It was all writing. It was poetry. It didn't necessarily rhyme. And we needed to do it for the Ebony's and black consumer markets. So
What is Ebony's?
Ebony Magazine.
Ebony Magazine. Okay.
African-American magazine.
Sure. Yeah.
So, and we had to do it for that. The cool thing about sports is it's not black or it's not white in general, right? And so you whether you were doing it for the black consumer market or the white consumer market or whatever, it had to be authentic to the sport. So in this case, it was basketball. So I did one called Like Father, Like Son, and everybody can relate to that, whether you, no matter what race you are. So it was a shadow of two kids up against the wall, and there was a basketball hoop, and you could see the shadow of the basketball hoop, the shadow of those kids. One kid had a ball in his hand. It's kind of like you could tell one kid had a which way are they going to go. One kid had a dad, one didn't. And it's like father, like son. And you would spell out the negative of a dad going one way and the positive of a kid going a different way. And I'd never forget the ending on it. Let's see, now that I say I'll never forget, but it was like, be there for him and he'll be there for his brother. And so you could take that a few different ways. Is the brother a black brother, or is it just your brother as a human being? Or, and I remember the creative director hated that line. Yes, you, Julius, hated that line. And it's like, dude, I'm not changing that line. He said, yeah, but it sounds like you're talking about a black brother. I said, well, that's you. I said, brother, E-R. I didn't say anything about brother, T-H-A, which is how I would, that would let you know who I was talking about. I wanted it to be ambiguous. Thank you. So that whoever was reading that thing, because I didn't say anything about what race these kids were, it was shadows. I didn't say anything about race. I didn't, you know, it was relatable to whoever happened to be reading it, even though it was going to be
So in that moment, when he challenged you, you've got a whole history of being able to stand up for your ideas, yourself, what's right.
Right.
And so you didn't turtle, you didn't cow, you know, you didn't move away from it.
Well, it was for the African-American market. Here's a white creative director going to tell me what's right for the African-American market.
There you go.
Probably wasn't going to go over too well. I would have found another reason to disagree with him if he would have been black, but it wasn't going to go over. And the cool thing about that, the next one we did was called Goals, and it had overhead shot of a hoop. Scott Bedbury, who was the head of Nike advertising at the time, dug that so much that not only did it run in Ebony magazine, it ran in Sports Illustrated. And that was talking about, and I wove in the story of having goals. Yes, there's which was relatable to my life, which is I want to be an athlete. I want to play in the NBA. But you got to have other goals. And one of them I put in there was, you want to be president? That was one of the goals. In other words, nothing's, if this is not going well, your original goal, what are you going to do? Are you going to alter your shot? So, yeah, those are two. And those ended up winning awards and stuff.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
How many awards have you won in this space?
I don't know.
A lot, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know when we were talking before, I said, I asked you a question about kind of how you get introduced. And you said, man, I don't want to bring that up. Because you do get introduced as a legend in the field. You get introduced as a creative genius. And are you embarrassed by that? Or is this something that you just, it feels like it's not important?
It is important, but it's not. It's a weird balance, because it is important because I'm one of the few blacks. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to be a role model for other kids coming up. Who are like, damn, what's going on with this advertising thing? This is, you know, this is BS. So you definitely want to be a role model so they can have somebody to look up to, just like I had folks to look up to not in advertising per se. Not blacks in advertising, but I had definitely had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, obviously my mom and dad. So you Jim Brown, Michael Jackson, the J5, I mean, all these black figures. So you definitely want to be a black figure to be looked up to in a business that doesn't have that many of these kids to look up.
You take that part seriously.
Yeah. Like, so it's important to have. Yeah, damn right. Yeah. You better introduce me right.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you got to also, you can't take that with you, right? You can't like a freaking jerk. And can't bring that home, can't bring that into the office or whatever.
That's so great.
It's strictly just for somebody to have some inspiration. okay. is important.
Were you able to meet some of those leaders that influenced you, or was that more the public persona of them? Muhammad and Michael Jackson.
I put Ali in a Gatorade campaign, a couple Gatorade campaigns. I put Kareem in a Gatorade campaign. I've met Jim Brown, but not spent a whole lot of time with him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've met some of them.
Any disappointments? But I met
Bootsy Collins. George Clinton and Bootsy Collins. That was growing up. Those cats. I don't know if they understand. Like some of them you can talk to. I've met, obviously, like I said, I've met some. I won't mention any names. None of the ones I mentioned just then.
Yeah.
But you've met some of them, and they don't understand how much they mean to
That's
you,
right.
how they meant to you. And for them, they're just like, oh, here's another groupie or whatever. But it's like for me, growing up where I was growing up, if Ali didn't knock out George Foreman, whoo, that I couldn't go back to school.
You said a little too much before the fight, huh?
I wouldn't be eating lunch for months. Like Michael Jackson, that when Michael Jackson came along, the Jackson Five, all of them, I mean from Tito to Jermaine to Jackie, to Marlon and Michael, mad important because they had these afros. So I'm going to school before the J5. And what's up with this dude's hair? And you'd be sitting there in class and somebody's bouncing their hand on your afro. And I was like, get your hand off what is wrong with you? And they thought it was just the most bizarre, weird thing to them. And it wasn't cool to them. Long come to J5. Afro's cool.
Mm. How long have you been growing your dreads? They're about midway down your back.
This is about... I started growing them again. I was bald in 2004. So I've been growing my hair since 2004.
You're bald. You shaved.
Yeah. I had dreads from 1994 to 2004. So 7 years. Mm-hmm. No, 1997 to 2004. And so 7 years, and I cut it all off.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So
was that like for an energy reason? Was it for like
no?
You hear people talk about that, right? Like spiritual, whatever.
No. It was I read somewhere I can't remember where it was in the New Testament. Paul was talking about hair is embarrassment or something along those lines, and I wasn't sure about it, but rather than be disrespectful to the Lord, I say, it's only hair. It'll grow back if I decide that I was mistaken about that. So I cut it all off. And then I was talking to a pastor at a church, and he said, Samson had long hair. And that was the essence of da-da-da-da-da. And I said, good point. I grow my hair back.
So I see a lot of pictures with Jesus with flowy, you know, like not as long as yours, but like hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Nike Freestyle, not something that you're, I mean, it's an iconic, maybe, I don't know your involvement. I always thought that you were the impetus for that, mm-hmm. And maybe you can share like what your involvement with that mm-hmm. commercial was. And then a lot of people might not know exactly what it is by name, but I'm sure most people listening have heard of it.
That is, a lot of magazines, Dime Magazine, Slam Magazine, it's Complex Magazine, any magazine, ESPN, whatever, whatnot, it'll be in minimum top 10, if not number one. And at one point, I don't know if he's got a new favorite now, but at one point it was Phil Knight's all time favorite basketball ad. So that was pretty dope. No, I was just going to, without what I did on, I wasn't in Widening Kennedy when I did
Those two first projects, the one that got you to next?
That helped me to get into. So without that, I'm not in Widening Kennedy, and I don't have the opportunity to do Nike Freestyle.
So let's go back to those first two. Were you trying, and no right and wrong answer, but were you trying to create something special to create something special, or were you trying to create something to get you exposed to the next larger pond, like because you had goals of being something as a kid?
It was all of the above.
It was.
Yeah. I mean, everything that I do, it has some type of spiritual nature to it. I can't say everything, but vast majority of it.
I can't wait to talk about the two projects two projects in particular, one that we're working on together now, and the other one, which has to do with a drink. I can't wait to talk about those. So, okay, hold those for just a moment.
All right.
Yeah. So everything, most everything has a spiritual component.
Yeah, you are nothing. If you go back and look at my work, I'll drop God off in there. Father and like son, but no, but that's a spiritual.
Yeah.
Yes. Father and son. How God wants you to treat other people, how the world should be. It's not unlikely that it's going to have the word God in it in some shape, form, or fashion, or either his spirit, how he wants you to act. So that was that. So because whatever my work, that's, you know, I believe this is coming from the Lord. So he needs to be represented in what you're doing. I can't be everywhere, but my work can be in a whole bunch of places and I'm not there. So they can see, feel.
Hold on. That's really important because we think often about how important it is to be right and influence the people around you, whatever that right means to you, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's not just one way. There's lots of ways that people think about that concept. And you're saying, no, let it. Okay. That's part one. Part two is have it be infused in your work.
Yep.
Because your work can reach and go further than
you can. Yeah, I've been in, before I ever visited Japan, my work was in Japan. Before I went to New Zealand, before I went to China, I haven't been to China yet, but you know what I'm saying? My work was there. And if my work, by extension, a message from the Lord is in that work, and then, you know, building off of that, and, you know, that'll have some influence. Somebody else does something, and next thing you know, they might be able to come to Christ or something.
Okay, so before we go to Nike Freestyle, the ad or the campaign, what would you you work through your relationship with God,
right?
And you're touted as a creative genius. I think you probably see yourself as having access to genius creativity. I don't know how you would respond to that, but I imagine you embrace
everybody.
It.
Well, but everybody does. It's not. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't.
Okay, that's where
it
I'm
doesn't
going.
Make me special.
That's where I'm
it's
going.
It's because I believe it.
Okay. Oh.
That's the only difference I got maybe between me and somebody else is like, I believe that God is doing this thing. And so, you know, I act on it.
Okay. So I don't think I got clear on how you knew your path, because I think the way you answered it was I was always doing creative things in the house because I didn't have places to go and I didn't have, you know, kids around. So I was creating from within. I think that that's how you figured out your skill, but I'm not sure I know how you know your path. That it's this is what you're supposed to be doing. The second that I want to have like a counterpoint to is, can you have creative genius if you're an atheist, if you don't believe, if you are heathen, if you're a full pagan and living that lifestyle? Mm-hmm. Do you still have access in your model? Do you still have access to creative genius?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
I mean, there's they just don't acknowledge where that's coming from. They can be a atheist and not believe in God. And it's like, I cannot believe in you. I cannot believe that you're there. You're sitting. I can believe that Michael Gervais is not talking to me. It doesn't mean that Michael is not talking. That, you know,
that
you
it's real.
Yeah. That is real.
So let's take it a step further, more aggressively. If you're Satan worshiper, I don't even know. I don't know anyone that does that, but I'm sure there's plenty, right? So more aggressively away from God. Can you have creative genius from there?
Yeah, there's been, I think I'm not saying they were Satan worshipers or anything like that, but there've been plenty of songs out there with the devil in it. And
Shout
and,
at the Devil.
Yeah, Shout at the Devil, Highway to Hell, Sympathy for the Devil. There's been all types of stuff that has not come from a good place. Mm. But, you know, Sympathy for the Devil is a good song. I don't listen to it, but lyrically, musically, that's a good song. And
Because torment, coming from a place of torment, can create some incredible things.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't want to come from that place, but
I just think that is also, I mean, it's not the genius, the evil one, the adversary is a genius. I mean,
say that again.
The devil is a genius.
There you go.
So you can definitely have some influence from him that is like sheer genius, but it doesn't mean it's not evil. So the what they did with the 9/11 slamming into the Twin Towers, that was sheer genius. That was That was on another level, historic, never been done before, so on and so forth. But that doesn't mean that it was not evil. It was one of the most evil acts that you could commit.
So you can hold genius and evil. Those two can work together.
Yep.
Yeah. Hitler.
Yep. Yeah. Genius communicator.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now, can we go back really quickly? I know we got a couple of things that are really going to be fun to talk about, but
I guess
your path.
You could say despicable genius, but go ahead.
How do you know you're on the right path now? You had creative exercises in time when you were young. You naturally were a good writer. You're in love with God. And how do you know you're on the right path?
I don't have any reservations. I don't have any doubt. Man, am I doing the right thing? Man, should I be doing something else? I don't have any of that.
For people that don't have or haven't been afforded the space that you have, that don't have the inner fight, they didn't have those models, and they are working a 9-to-5 that is not stimulating for them. Either they're not knowing how to be stimulated in it, or which is, it's their fault, right? Mm-hmm. Because we can find joy in anything that we're doing. Or they know it's not right for them, that they're meant to be doing something else. They don't know what it is yet, and they're afraid to maybe take a shot or to explore. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, I don't know if this answers your question or not, but look, give it a shot. And then if it doesn't, just tell me and I'll figure out something else. But I was going through a really rough time in 2013 and 2014. And then in business was not going good. Like, I didn't know if I was going to be able to keep the doors open for amusement park.
Mm. And that was like year two or three of amusement park?
Amusement park started in 2011. So in the beginning, money was there and everything. And then it started drying up in 2013, 2014.
Okay.
Right. And Michael Roth from IPG, he's the chairman CEO of IPG. He's the one that funded the company, funded the amusement park. He's a IPG is a minority owner. And he's
still.
Yeah. In Amusement Park Inc., no. But in Amusement Park Entertainment, yes, a minority owner.
Got it.
But he kept saying, now, Jimmy's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. First time I've sat down and ate with him, it's going to be hard. And I said, no, it's not. It's going to be easy. I'm telling you, it's going to be hard. And it's like you're talking to your granddad. And no, it's not. No, it's... And sure enough, 2013 started getting hard. 2014, it started getting harder. And I said, boy, that dude he's right. And, I was selling our cars, we had to sell our house in Oregon.
You did?
Yeah. It was when I say hard, it was mad difficult. And then I was reading this article. It just happened to catch my eye. It was called Stresswood, and it was, Biosphere 2. That contraption that they built in the middle of the desert in Arizona to kind of mimic what happens if, you know, if we were living on the moon, mm-hmm. could you build a facility where humans could live inside of it? Or if global warming got so bad, could you live inside of this facility? And they had, you know, it has water, it has soil. They were, and they put like 8 people, I believe, in there, and they were supposed to live in there for like 3 years. I think they only made it 2 years, year and a half or something like that. But they were not to come out, and they were going to live inside of this facility. And they had things that would mimic a lot of the things that happened in the real world in terms of nature. One of the things they didn't mimic was wind. So they would plant these trees, and the trees would shoot up real quick, and then they collapse. And the scientists and the folks living there couldn't figure out why these trees, where they had everything. They had sun, they had the right temperature, they had water, they had soil, but they just collapsed. And then they finally figured out they didn't have any wind. They didn't have anything blowing on them left to right, sideways, forward, whatever. because as it was a little shoot, it get a little wind and it would build up what they call stress wood.
Strength.
As it grew up more, more stress wood
is what they call
more stress wood, more stress wood. And that's why a doggone, Everglade tree or one of the giant sequoias can be however many feet up in the air and not tip over, is because they have stress wood every step of the way. And I was reading that and I said, that's it. This is stress wood. This is not God throwing us under the bus. This is not him trying to damage us or hurt us. And then you relate it obviously to lifting weights. If you don't lift, you don't get stronger.
Micro tears.
You got to have the micro tears.
So is stress wood a scientific term, or is this a term that a creative added to explain what these trees needed? They needed that resistance and that bending and pushing early on so they could develop the strength and to be resilient at a later time.
I don't know who wrote the article, this particular art, whether it was coming.
So that's not okay. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm so excited about this. You're not sure if this is like a concept that is well accepted in science.
No, I think it is.
It is.
Okay. I'm almost positive. Yeah. If you Google stress wood, it'll come up. Yeah.
God, I love it. So you read that and you said, this is my phase in life right now is stress wood.
Stress wood.
Why?
I got so happy when I read that.
So that's a simple idea.
Yeah.
Stress wood. Stress wood. God, that's good. Okay, I hope you've enjoyed this part of the conversation. This is part one. And for more information, head over to either findingmastery.net and you can find other podcasts, but also part two will be there as well, and or punch over to iTunes as well for both Finding Mastery as well as Minutes on Mastery. And that's just a quick little reminder that we fired up Minutes on Mastery. Applied insights and takeaways under 3 minutes, you know the drill. So hopefully you're finding that useful. And if you're enjoying that, let us know on social, get us a review, help us kind of ride that momentum so that we can expose the insights from just some of the most brilliant creative minds in the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.